นี่แหละ
Let us be deported to the foreign nation. In doing this, you are righteous. You are tzedek. For thou hast dealt faithfully, and we have acted wickedly. Now, righteousness of God, what?
Just.
In what sense?
If you do wrong, he has to punish.
Right. The righteousness of God does punish. Right? Okay, look at this. Some more. Another passage. 2 Chronicles 12, 5 and 6. Thus say the Lord, you abandoned me. So I have abandoned you to the hand of Shishak, of the enemy. Then the princes of Israel and the king humbled themselves and said, the Lord is righteous. The enemy of Israel, God's people, came to attack them. And God said, yes, I am going to give you up and let Shishak, the enemy, have you. And the people say, God, you are righteous in doing this. What? The righteousness of God does punish. The righteousness of God does punish, right? One more. Daniel 9:14. Daniel, of course, was one of the deported. He was deported there. One of the people who were deported to Babylonia, and Daniel prayed. He said, therefore, the Lord has kept ready the calamity and has brought it upon us. Okay? God let us suffer. For the Lord our God is righteous. Because God is righteous, therefore he let us suffer, punish us. In all the works which he has done, and we have not obeyed his voice. The righteousness of God does punish. Some more here. Jeremiah again, prophet, 11:20. But O Lord of hosts, who judgest righteously, who triest the heart and the mind, let me see thy vengeance upon them. God, 向他们报仇，这些人坏错了。OK, vengeance, 就惩罚他们。Because you are righteous, punish them. That's what he say. Let me see thy vengeance upon them, for to thee have I committed my cause. These enemies are doing something evil. So God, you are righteous, therefore punish them. So what do we get? Righteousness does punish. Oh, 问题来了。A moment ago, we said the righteousness of God does not punish, right?
Yes.
We saw some. But now, here, the righteousness of God does punish.哇，自相矛盾。Hold the trouble. Okay, let me show you something. Yes.
I think in number 4, we can also consider God as faithful. And then if we have the background of God already make his commandment, if you...obey,
then the punishment will come. So he is faithful what he says, so the punishment is coming. Namely, from the passage, well, I can do it another way. One way is I will not tell you the answer and just show you some passages. That one way of doing this, but I tried to cut down your confusion as minimum. Therefore, I tell you the answer first. And I can either go through the way of generalization or go the way of particularization. So I am going to go the way of particularization to the substantiation. To show you, to take you through this with less confusion. So I'll show you the answer first. The righteousness of God will extend favor, blessing to the righteous ones, but judgment, punishment to the unrighteous ones. So therefore, whether you get receive blessing or receive judgment depends upon whether you are righteous one or not. The righteousness of God extends favor, blessing to the righteous ones, but judgment, punishment to the unrighteous ones. Okay, let me make a statement first and then try to substantiate. Try to give evidence to support what I say. Now, Psalm 5, 8, and 12. Here. Lead me, O Lord, in thy righteousness, for thou dost bless the righteous. Okay? God, you will bless the righteous. Therefore, lead me in thy righteousness. Therefore, the righteousness of God will bless the righteous. Okay? For thou dost bless the righteous, O Lord, thou dost cover him with favor as with a shield. Therefore, the righteousness of God will extend favor to the righteous ones. Okay? Psalm 112, 4 and 6. Light rises in the darkness for the upright. The Lord is gracious, mercy and righteous. For the righteous will never be moved, he will remember forever. Now, the righteous will never be moved. Why? Because God is righteous. The righteousness of God will guarantee, or the righteousness of God will extend favor to the righteous ones. Therefore, the righteous one will never be moved. Okay? Is that clear? Now, the next question we'd like to ask is, then who are righteous? What is the essence of the righteous?
Jesus Christ.
Yes, Jesus Christ. What else? The essence, the very essence of righteousness. What kind of thing will make me righteous? Huh? Yinxin Chengyi. Okay, and what else? Let's look at
the righteousness of Jesus.
Righteousness.
What we have is his righteousness.
Okay, let's look at the Bible here first. What is the righteous? What is the essence of righteousness? Let me show you something this time. I take another approach this time now. And 11. Many are the pangs of the wicked, but steadfast love surrounds him who trusts in the Lord. Okay. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, all righteous, and shout for joy, all you upright in heart. Now, he's talking about all righteous. There are some people who are righteous people. Okay. But sometimes we think, well, the righteous one, that one who is righteous, is the one who never committed sin, is righteous. That's the way we think, right? But he said all righteous here. Now, look at Psalm 32, same chapter here. Same chapter. Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Now, this person, of course, has some transgression. He has some sin. I acknowledge my sin to thee, and I did not hide my iniquity. Therefore, righteousness is not necessarily sinless. Righteousness is not necessarily sinlessness. 换句话说啊, 你要 be qualified to be a righteous. You don't have to have say I never have commit sin anymore before. 就说, 我从来没有犯过罪, 并不是义人的条件。 OK, 我从来没有犯过罪。 并不是义人的条件，换句话说，有些人曾经犯过罪，在某一种情况底下，他还可以称为义人。OK， 并不是说 you have to be never commit sin, sinless in the sense of never commit sin to qualify as a righteous one. Because over here, this guy, this person, this psalmist. Acknowledge his sin. He said that, yeah, I commit sin. But yet he claimed to be righteous. Now, look at some more here. Psalm 118:15-20. Now, hark glad songs of victory in the tents of the righteous. Open to me the gates of righteousness, that I may enter through them. And give thanks to the Lord. Why? You open the gate of righteousness when you go in. Because I'm righteous. The gate is open. The gate of righteousness is open for only those who are righteous can enter in. And I am going in. Therefore, I am the righteous one. This is the gate of the Lord. The righteous shall enter through it. Therefore, over here, Israel is conscious that I'm righteous, right? Because you are going to open the gate of righteousness for me to go in. And I'm the righteous. Yet, okay, Israel is conscious that they are righteous, yet they are also conscious of their sin. Israel admits sin, Psalm 143:2. Enter not into judgment with thy servant, for no man living is righteous before thee. Okay. Psalm 133. If thou, O Lord, shouldst mark iniquity, Lord, who could stand? I have sinned. Yet I'm righteous. So what we have observed here is that, okay, sinlessness, 就是从来没有犯过罪, you have never committed sin. Sinlessness, in this sense, you have never committed sin, is not necessarily the condition of righteousness, or the condition of being a righteous one. Namely, you don't have to be sinless in the sense of you have never committed sin to be qualified a righteous one.
Do we have anybody who is sinlessness?
Sinless, except Jesus, right? So now I'm just showing you. So somebody will say, well, since I committed sin that. In the day past, therefore, I'm hopeless because I cannot be righteous. The scripture we say, well, no, don't worry about it. Not the part. No, don't worry about it. But that's not the important condition. Now, all who take refuge in thee rejoice. Let them ever sing for joy, and do thou defend them, that those who love thy name may exult in thee. For thou dost bless the righteous, O God, who does cover him with favor as a shield. God will bless the righteous ones. Therefore, of course, the righteous one has to be to rejoice, right? Who are to rejoice?
Rejoice in the Lord always.
Yeah, but who?
Those who take refuge.
Huh? Say again.
Those who take refuge.
Okay, hold there. Somebody say something.
Those
love.
Covered.
Huh?
Covered. Covered.
Yeah, but who are the righteous ones? Pardon? Right. Namely, those who take refuge in thee, and those who love thy name. These people are the righteous ones. Okay? The righteous ones are not necessarily sinless ones, but the righteous ones are those who take refuge in God and those who love the name of God. Right? Many are the pangs of the wicked, but steadfast love surrounds him who trusts in the Lord. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, all righteous, and shout for joy, all you upright in heart. Who are the righteous ones?
Trust the Lord.
Namely, those who trust in the Lord, right? So, to be righteous ones, you have to trust in the Lord. 33, Psalm 33, 1 and 18. Rejoice in the Lord, all you righteous. Behold, the eye of the Lord is on those who fear him and those who hope in his steadfast love. Who are the righteous ones? Those who fear him. And who else? And those who hope in his steadfast love. These are the righteous ones. Right? Psalm 112, verse 1 and 6. Blessed is the man who fears the Lord, who greatly delights in his commandment. For the righteous will never be moved, he will remember forever. Who are the righteous ones? Name the fool, fear the Lord, and the fool delights in his commandment. In other words, the righteous ones are those who trust in God. Right?
Love each other. His commandments is love, right?
Similar thing here, right. Look at here. Psalm 103, 11, 17 and 18. But the steadfast love of the Lord is from everlasting, everlasting. Upon those who fear him and his righteousness to children, to those who keep his commandment and remember to do his commandments. Therefore, righteousness is in covenant relationship with God. Okay. Righteousness, man's righteousness, is to be in covenant relationship with God. Now, Genesis 15:6, and Abraham believed the Lord, and he reckoned it to him as righteousness. Namely, when Abraham trusts in the Lord, that is his righteousness. Right? Now, let's turn to another passage. Let's look at Genesis chapter 38. Now, it's a long passage, so let me just tell you a little bit the background. Genesis chapter 38 is the story of Tamar and Judah. Now, Judah had three sons. Of course, his wife died. He has three sons. And according to the custom of the ancient custom, if the eldest son had a wife, and if the eldest son died before he has any son, his brother has to marry his older brother's wife. And the first son which is born of this new marriage be counted as the son of his elder brother. Now, Judah has three sons. One, the first one, is by name Er. I think. But anyway, the name is not so important. Let's just say. Judah has three sons. The first one is Er. Second one is Onan. Third one is called Shelah. Here. Er married Tamar, and Er died before they had any child. Therefore, it became the responsibility of Onan to marry Tamar, and the first child born of this new marriage will be called the son of Er. So Onan married Tamar. But Onan thought that, well, if I have the child with Tamar, that child doesn't belong to me. That child belongs to Er. So he practiced something tricky. So the law was not preached. So Onan died also. Now Judah said, I have three sons. Er married Tamar, died. Onan married Tamar, died. Now Shelah has to marry Tamar. If Shelah married Tamar and dies, then I don't have any child. So Judah thought, okay, I'll play some trick. So he told Tamar, said, Tamar, come on, come here. He said that Shelah has to marry you, but you know Shelah is too young to marry you. So you go home and wait till when Shelah has grown up. When he can marry you, then I will send for you. Then you can marry. Then Shelah will marry you. But actually, Judah did not want Shelah, the third son, to marry Tamar. So when Shelah grown up, Shelah came to the point that really he could marry. Judah would not let him marry Tamar. Now Tamar knew this. Well, the Judah played some kind of trick on me. Would not let his third son marry me. So one day, one year, Judah was to go to his harvest where he lived, and he had to go to his harvest place. And on his way, he has to go through Tamar's town. This is where Judah lived. This is where Tamar lived, and this is where his harvest is. So Judah has to go through here and go to do harvest. So Tamar disguised herself. Of course, she knew when Judah is going through. So she disguised herself like a prostitute, dressed in the dress of prostitute, and sat beside the roadside. So Judah will go through. Of course, this prostitute will entice people. So Tamar disguised herself as a prostitute, and when Judah came through, she somehow enticed Judah to have relation with him. Of course, when you go to have relation with a prostitute, you have to pay. Now Tamar is very clever. Judah said, well, I don't have anything to pay you now. I have to go to harvest, so I don't have money right now. Tamar said, don't worry. Don't worry about money. You just give me some kind of evidence. Give me your staff. Give me your signet and another thing. Well, anyway, to as a guarantee, you give me those things, okay? And then when you go to harvest and you get money, then come to bring me the money, and then I'll give this back to you as a guarantee. So Judah had a relation with her, and Judah went on harvest. And after harvest, Judah thought that, well, I have money now, so I better get this thing back. So Judah sent somebody take money to pay that prostitute and try to get redeem the staff and signet, this thing, back. Tamar disappeared. Tamar would not come up. Tamar did not want to give this back to Judah. After a while, of course, Tamar was conceived. He has a baby. And some people report to Judah, say, well, Tamar has a baby now. He's pregnant. Oh, Judah was furious. Judah said, well, this guy. No, this guy, not guy, but this this lady. Come, she practiced adultery. Judah was furious. Judah said, well, bring her out and let her be stoned, be killed. So they tried to bring up Tamar for execution. So Tamar said, well, you go to tell Judah. Tell him that I become pregnant by the guy who owned this signet and this stuff. Tell him that. So they brought this to Judah and said, well, Judah, Tamar say she conceived from this guy to whom this belongs. Judah look at this and say, well, these are mine. At that time, what did Judah say? Judah said, Tamar is more righteous than I am. Now, what does this mean? Did Tamar make any kind of mistake, or did Tamar did something wrong, something evil? Did Tamar did something evil? He did. Because he disguised herself to be a prostitute to deceive Judah and entice Judah to have relation with her. So yes, Tamar has she did something wrong, but still she is righteous. Why? This indicates to us the concept of righteousness is not without doing any kind of evil, but righteousness is basically relational. It is relational rather than not violating any kind of law. Righteousness is 本身是一个 relational， 是关系上的问题， relational。 你看中文不晓得怎么翻，意是讲到关系，我们人与人当中的关系，人与神当中的关系，主要是这个，还不是说我从来没有犯过一条法律，我从来没有犯过做过一件神不喜欢的事。 OK， the basic concept of righteousness is relational。 Yes. But relational, what I mean is righteousness. The basic concept of righteousness is the right relationship. Rather than you never done any evil things, evil act. Okay? Because we used to think righteousness is not doing anything evil. But from here, we can know righteousness basically is relational, in the sense of righteousness has to do with our right relationship, rather than never doing anything evil or anything. Okay, this is a basic concept of relational. Now, let me just show you some more thing here. We have not get through it here yet. Now, righteousness is irrelational in the sense that when I do something which some relation imposed upon me, I am righteous. Okay, that is what I mean by righteousness is relational. Now, let me say this here. Psalm 143:1. Hear my prayer, O Lord. Give ear to my supplication. In thy faithfulness, answer me. in thy righteousness. Hold this. In thy full faithfulness, answer me, namely, answer me in thy righteousness. Namely, righteousness is faithfulness as well. Therefore, the righteousness of God is the faithfulness of God. Okay. Righteousness of God is faithfulness of God. Now, not only that, in Psalm 143:2, enter not into judgment with thy servant, for no man living is righteous before thee. What he's talking about? Namely, he's talking about no one living is without any kind of evil deeds. Namely, righteousness here means actually righteousness. Not merely relational, not merely in the right relationship with God, but even if here, okay, namely, what I'm saying here is righteousness here does not mean purely in the right relationship with God. Because surely there are some people, some living people who are in right relationship with God, right? So over here, righteousness means a person without any kind of evil deeds, but without sin. Okay? Now look at something here. Isaiah 33:15. He who walks righteously and speaks uprightly, who despises the gain of oppression, who shakes his hand lest they hold a bribe, who stops his ears from hearing of bloodshed, and shut his eye from looking upon evil. These people are who walks righteously. So righteousness here refers to your actual deed, actual good deed. Okay. Now, Ezekiel 18:21-22. But if a wicked man turns away from all his sins which he has committed, and keeps all my statutes, and does what is lawful and right, he shall surely live, he shall not die. None of the transgressions which he has committed shall be remembered against him, for the righteousness which he has done, he shall live. So righteousness here means actual righteousness in this group. So what we have done is this, thus far. We find 9 components of the meaning of righteousness. The first one is the righteousness means salvation, favor, healing, right? The second one is that righteousness does not punish. The third one we find out is that righteousness is equivalent, is synonymous to steadfast love. The fourth one says that righteousness does punish. The fifth one says the righteousness of God extends favor, blessing to the righteous ones, but judgment, punishment to the upright ones. Number 6. I lost here. The essence of righteousness, okay, the essence of the righteous ones is that, of course, the righteousness does not necessarily sin this, the righteous ones, but the righteous ones are those who trust in God. That's what we found. Number 7. We said that righteousness is basically relational. Number 8. We said the righteousness of God is faithfulness of God. Number 9, we said righteousness refers to actual righteousness. These are the components. These are the components of the meaning of righteousness we find in Old Testament. Okay?
You should learn the 6. Yeah, the 6, please.
Of righteousness. No, the essence of the righteous ones. Namely, A, righteous one, not necessarily sinless ones. B, righteousness, trust in God. And the C, 6C, B. Righteousness, trust in God. Number 4. I'm looking for page 4. C. Righteousness in covenant with God. Okay? Righteousness in covenant relationship with God.
Six A.
The righteous one, not necessarily sinless ones. Okay. B. Here. Righteousness, trust in God. Yeah. Righteousness, trust in God. Are you ready for our synthesis? Nation, favor, healing. Okay. Huh? Okay, 第二, and I show you 第四. 第二, righteousness does not punish. 第二, 第四是 righteousness does punish. Okay?
Righteousness does not punish.
Right. That's right. That's the reason. Okay. I think you may like, you may want to copy this one, so I'll let you. I don't know what is the best. Mind a concept which is big enough to include all these 9 component thing we have discovered. Okay. Now, in our study, this is the most difficult step. I wish I could let you try this. So become expertise. Really, if you learn this, you find many, many wonderful things in the Bible. I don't just do the word study. Particularly those who want to preach. If you just use this opportunity, I'll just tell you one example. One election, about 2 minutes, try to save time. One day in my class of exegesis, I gave them one assignment to find out what is the meaning of faith in the New Testament. Because you talk about we believe in Jesus Christ, what does it mean to believe in Jesus Christ? The concept of faith. Of course, go through the kind of the procedure I told you to do, etc. And I gave them about 4 weeks to work on that. Because they are not taking only one course, they take us 3-4 courses. That's the reason why I gave them a month to work on that. And one boy became that excited because he worked this and he said, I don't know if faith means this. He said, I did not know before that faith has that kind of rich content. So he became very excited. So one day he went to his church to preach. He is a student pastor. He went to preach. And he preached. Actually, of course, after he submitted his paper to me, I graded C minus. Now, C, of course, is a passing grade. So C minus means that he did not fail. He's just doing the average work, but weaker. Weak. Of course, C means average. C minus means a little weaker than average. Below average, but not so much. Anyway, I put a C minus on that paper. But anyway, he took it and preached to his congregation. And his congregation became so excited. And he, of course, he was excited too. He said that, well, after I finished preaching Sunday morning, he said, in my many years of pastoring, nobody ever shake their hand so enthusiastic with me. this morning. They said, well, Reverend such and such, this is the best sermon you ever preached. And he became very excited. And he said that, well, I wish I had learned this technique many, many years earlier. Those of you who have to preach, if you learn this kind of methodology and try to do a good job on this, you can preach one morning, laugh, one Sunday preach on faith, one morning, Sunday morning preach on hope, another preach on righteousness. You probably have about 3-4 years of the Sunday morning sermon ready for you in the Bible. Justice, yeah, all kind of things. And really, people like to know, okay, let me tell you this. People are not really so much interested in what is the opinion of Joseph Huang, opinion of David Chow, or whoever. They don't care. How about this? People are interested in knowing what Bible has to say about faith, about love, about hope, about everything. How to do it? Well, do this in word study. Do not give them the wrong idea, though. But if you do it and do this kind of thing, they'll be excited. One day, I was invited to speak to the ministers' workshop. About 100 ministers came to attend. And they assigned me a topic, how to preach. And I thought, well, maybe I just illustrate to them, show them how to do word study, and then they can get this kind of rich content. So I showed them how to do word study, and just show them. I didn't preach. I just showed them what is the meaning of. I just gave them 7 examples, because I lecture seven times in their workshop. So I gave them 7 words of Bible, key words of the Bible. They become very, very interested. And they say, well, I wish I had known this. Then I don't have to worry about without someone to preach. By this way, already I can preach about 4 or 5 years just on different keywords of the Bible. And you can really enrich your meaning, your understanding of the Bible this way. But let me give you a caution. You have to do a good job. Do not do a lousy job and tell people what not really faith is. That's a horrible thing. Okay, so let me try to summarize what is righteousness here. And then how this applies to Epistle Romans. I think we may have to wait till 12:40 to eat. But anyway. Now, in the Old Testament, righteousness is primarily a relational concept. Okay. It is the right relationship. What we talk about righteousness is. Or, another thing, it is the behavior appropriate to right relationship. Namely, I have a right relationship with my wife, and I do something to her which is appropriate, then I am righteous. Okay? Keep this in mind. Now, in Genesis 38:26, the act of Tamar, I explained to you, is called righteous, because it is appropriate in a social relationship. Namely, because she was the wife of Ur. That relationship required her to do something. So when she tried to fulfill this responsibility, that's her righteousness, to raise up a descendant for her deceased husband. Right? Okay. The dominant concept of righteousness in the Old Testament is religious righteousness. Basically, the right relationship between God and man. Okay. The basic relationship between God and man in the Old Testament is expressed through the concept of covenant, which Yahweh, namely God, the Lord, freely chooses to enter with Israel. So this is pure grace on the part of God. Now this covenant relationship is more basic than the law. Actually, this is a parenthetical statement. Within this relationship of grace, the law is given as a guide by God to His covenant people. Now,